Hello and welcome to Medical Podcast. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. Episode 225. That's an awful lot of episodes. We've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
We are talking about all sorts of different stuff today. Now, we just got home. We're getting ready to start this thing up today, and Watsy announced a bunch of stuff this morning, this early afternoon. And of course they do it on a weekday in the middle of the day while people are at work. So, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time to process a lot of that information. I'm sure that by the time you guys are listening to this, you've had time to look it over. So if we get any of the specifics wrong, please don't mind our snafus. But most importantly, we're going to look into the Pauper format, check in a little bit on you know, just what's going on in the world of Magic the Gathering. But Daryl, I don't know about you. I have spent my time, Magic-related time, looking into Pauper. A friend of mine brought that up to me the other day, saying that they actually had Pauper events in my neck of the woods on Fridays at one of the local places, and encouraged me to build a deck. And I said, you know, I do have a bunch of Pauper cards, as many of us do, because they're just commons. And I've never been able to, like, actually go out to play Pauper because no one ever runs events. And I was like, well, you know, it's not hard to build a deck. Like, got me looking, and it's very easy to not only build a deck, but to also kind of like bling it out, especially with, you know, foils and alternate arts and things like that. So I had some fun doing that.
Yeah. For a long time, I had Pauper Tron put together in real life.
Yeah.
And I just had it scattered to the wind at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the meta's really strange, and you have to consider, like, in Pauper, like, because you're only in commons, there's a lot of different elements that are not existent in the format. Like, you know, like, the big haymakers aren't there. Like, you don't have to deal with the likes of, like, Ugin and Ulamog type of spells because they just don't have those at common. And so, like, the biggest thing you're going to be fighting off is, like, a 5/5 Grimmog Angler type of creature. Now, there is a Storm deck. There's a Chatterstorm deck.
When you talk about Tron type things, there's Ulamog's Crusher.
Ulamog's Crusher,
that's
yeah.
Got it.
And the Tron deck is largely, there's a Tron deck in Pauper, but the Tron deck is largely like a control style, like Maldrifter value deck, Mnemonic Wall value deck, that just blinks the creatures and recurs the blink spell with the Mnemonic Wall. So it's pretty infuriating, but you're doing some more small time chip shot damage in this format, which is a lot of fun. It gives you a totally different perspective on the game. But the exciting thing is for one to build a Pauper deck. You can do that on a very low tier subscription to manatraders.com. You like that seamless transition there. Because the decks are very affordable. We're looking at like ranging from like 15 tickets to some of them are quite expensive, 154 tickets for this Storm deck I'm looking at, but most of them are, you know, hovering around the 30 to 40 ticket range. ManaTraders.com. Use our promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Once again, that is CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, no hyphens, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Thank you to that sponsor. So real quick, before we dive into the Pauper, just a real quick and dirty look at this new stuff that's been talked about today. There's like Commander Collection Black. You guys remember the Commander Collection Green we chatted about a long time ago. You remember that, Daryl?
Yeah.
Command Tower, yeah, Sol Ring.
Yeah, we talked about that.
They seem to be staples in these Command collections.
Stone Library, Worldly Tutor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's got Liliana Heretical Healer in it, as well as Ghoul Caller Giza, Ophiomancer, Phyrexian Arena, Reanimate, Toxic Deluge, and then the aforementioned Sol Ring and Command Tower. I have to be honest, not as excited about this one, but still cool.
Yeah, I mean, two to three, like, money, valuable cards. One in the Phyrexian Arena range, which is Toxic Deluge, it's got a reprint recently. And just good old Phyrexian Arena.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this one's a hard pass for me. There's a way more value in the green deck than this one, it seems. But maybe I'm just misunderstanding the value of some of these cards. I know Phyrexian Arena is always pretty pricey card, but
yeah.
Sol Ring and Command Tower have to be reprinted into oblivion at this point. They get so many versions.
Literally free.
Yeah. And so like we talk about with the basic lands, like, the, you know, you're kind of wearing them out a little bit. you know, considering there's so many promo versions of these as well. It's like,
yeah,
you know, you have so many choices. Anyways, that exists. We've got Innistrad Midnight Hunt coming out on September 2nd. And then we had an announcement with the upcoming standard sets in 2022, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Ooh, this one looks nice. So we're going back to Kamigawa.
What is this, an anime?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we just got the set name at this point, but Neon Destiny makes me think like something in the vein of like Shadowrun type of like Overwatch, cyberpunk type of thing. Then the Streets of New Capenna. I don't know how to say that.
No clue.
Dominaria United. We're going back to Dominaria. And then quarter four of 2022. This one's got to get people excited. The Brothers War, one of the most famous stories in the era of Magic the Gathering novels.
Is that Urza v. Yawgmoth?
It is Urza and Mishra.
Artificer Prodigy.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those cards is much better than the other.
Well, what about characters, though, you know, in the lore? I always had good intentions to read those, and I had the Nemesis one. They used to give them out with the fat packs, I think, in fact. I wasn't, like, a good enough reader at the time. I was, like, actually collecting them with the fat packs to you know, actually understand some of the language they were using, because it was like this really thick, like dense fantasy language in a lot of cases that it just kind of lost me in some of the books.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyways, I think going back, I'd probably enjoy them, but yeah.
Just gotta find them.
Yeah. Gotta find them. They're tricky to find.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got Universes Beyond products, and Universes Beyond products are where WotC delves into the other IPs, and these are not standard legal. However, they are sets that use artwork and characters and locations and themes from these other IPs. So we're going to be looking into Warhammer 40K for these, Lord of the Rings, Tales of Middle Earth. And then there's even Secret Lairs that are going to feature imagery from Fortnite.
Nope.
And Street Fighter.
Pack it in. We're done here.
No, you don't want any of that.
No.
No, good. Okay. And then, of course, on the 26th of August, coming up next week, just in 2 days, I'm sorry, this week, Jumpstart Historic Horizons, and I'm really looking forward to that one. So
it's time. Corey's time to shine.
Yeah. Last thing in this big giant ass chunk of information here, Magic comes to Netflix. Oh, so this has been teased for a long time. We've been hearing about this Magic Netflix series. So I'm just going to read this down a little bit. Magic comes to Netflix in 2022 with its own series starring familiar, fresh, and reimagined characters in a whole new story. Watch the reveal in our Magic Showcase 2021 video. You'll have to visit this actual teaser here to see this, to see visual previews, and even better, hear from the voice of Gideon himself, Brandon Routh. Ladies and gentlemen, do you know who that is?
No. I know nothing. I know literally know nothing about pop culture.
He is an American film actor, of course. He played Superman in the film Superman Returns. So, you know, hunky, muscular actor known for his weakness to kryptonite, but also his ability to lift heavy objects. That seems appropriate for him to also be Gideon.
Yeah, hunky, muscular Gideon. Got it. Nailed it.
Cool. Yeah, so there you go. That's that. You can check that out and do a more in-depth dive into all that information if you're interested. We're certainly not going to spend too much more time on that, but I thought we would be remiss not to cover it. Okay, Pauper, shall we?
Let's talk about Pauper, baby.
Woo-hee! All right, Daryl, I'd imagine that having played Magic for some number of decades, you probably have some number of commons lying around your collection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy how the power of said commons has crept up in over those years. I've been looking at this collection of Pauper cards here, these Pauper decks, I should say, and as I familiarize myself with this format again, I was able to kind of go through my collection, or at least the cards I had in my office here. I have more in my basement, of course, as everyone does, and kind of pick out the playables in Pauper and put together a Pauper binder. Now, with the exception of a few quote unquote like mistakes that were made early in Magic's history, with some cards that may be considered like pretty high power levels. I don't know if I could say mistakes. That might be a little. That might be rude.
No, you could say things like Dark Ritual are a mistake.
All right. Well, Snuff Out comes to mind as one of those cards. It's like a really powerful common. It's like a force level common in this format. But a lot of these cards are coming from the more recent formats, or are cards that are only printed in uncommon or higher rarities in paper, but happen to be printed at common in the online format, which is the only thing that actually matters for Pauper's legality. So, for example, the Hymn to Torak. Okay. Is that one actually legal? I don't think that's legal.
Yeah. It's definitely popular.
Okay.
It might be banned, but I'm pretty sure it's popular.
Okay. Well, Chainer's Edict is one that comes to mind. That's one that's only an uncommon in paper, and I don't know where it came from as a common in MTGO, but it is a Pauper legal card because of its printing as a
probably
common.
Probably a master set.
It must have been.
Probably one of the master sets, like Master Edition 1, 2, 3, or 4. One of those.
So
they probably need it for limited.
Okay. So I just want to introduce the meta so that those that aren't familiar with Pauper can kind of get a feel for what exists in the meta. And like I said, the threats are a little different. The types of cards that you have access to are a little different. For those that are familiar with Modern, Standard, Pioneer, it's a little unusual to think about, like, you know, just to conceptualize like what you'd be up against, what you'd be building for, without having played or just really like dug into this format. But I'm just looking at the MTG Goldfish page right now, and Daryl, feel free to chime in with your observations about this format and, you know, kind of what you know about these decks. But I'm going to just go down the list a little bit here. The first one, in terms of meta share, and this seems to be a little dated because I think this has changed more recently, but first one in terms of meta share is Affinity. And Affinity is a deck that uses Atog, which is another one of those uncommons that was reprinted at common at some point along the way. Atog is one in a red for a 1/2. You can sacrifice an artifact to give Atog +2/+2 until end of turn. And Atog, of course, pairs with a bunch of cheap or free, because of the word affinity, like literally affinity, not like modern affinity, artifacts in the deck, as well as artifact lands such as Great Furnace, Seat of the Synod, and Silver Bluff Bridge, the brand new one that is indestructible. Darksteel Citadel as well. So it's got Frogmites, it's got Gear Seeker Serpent, which gets one less to cast for each artifact you control, and is a 5/6. It's kind of like your Gurmag Angler in this deck.
Yeah, big fat.
And then it's got Frogmites, Mirror Enforcers, and Sojourner's Companions, which are all just affinity creatures. And I shouldn't say just, because there are some big fatty affinity creatures, some of them 4/4s, which is pretty ginormous for Pauper, especially when you can play them basically for free.
Four is definitely a huge number for Pauper. Like, Lightning Bolt and Rift Bolt exist.
Yeah.
Flame Slash exists, but there's not, like, a ton of those. And the removal is pretty limited. You have stuff like Terror and Doom Blades. Like, you have some of that removal that you're used to, but, like...
Yeah.
Black creatures sometimes get away with it in this format, depending on, you know, what removal you have access to.
Yeah, I mentioned Snuff Out before. Snuff Out is one that gets played quite a bit in black decks. It's a 4-mana spell that I think it can only target non-artifact creatures. Let me double check that. Yeah, non-black creatures. Okay, can't be regenerated.
Yeah, you can pay for life if you control a swamp.
Right.
Destroy target non-black creature, it can't be regenerated.
But I think a good baseline removal spell in Pauper to consider is Cast Down, because Cast Down is one in a black for an instant. It says destroy target non-legendary creature. Considering that there are very few common creatures that are legendary, this is kind of like, you know, the...
That's murder.
Yeah, this is kind of like the fatal push of this format, or like the Swords to Plowshares of this format, I would say.
Yeah, in terms of just, pretty like, sure Murder's the Cut's also legal.
Is it? I don't know.
Pretty sure I thought Murder's Cut was a common. I might be wrong.
That's an uncommon. It was printed in paper, an uncommon. I don't. don't know about that one.
Got it. Couldn't remember.
Go ahead. This one makes the ATOG very large. Of course, you can attack the dome with it, but it also plays some number of flings to launch the ATOG at the face directly to kill the opponent.
Yeah. Yep.
Galvanic Blast, Thought Cast also help the plan, and then some number of supporting cast artifacts that convert some mana. Okay.
Yep, Springleaf Drum, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah. So we've also got Dimir Fairies. Dimir Fairies is a blue-black control-y tempo style deck, which is kind of like the Ninja of the Deep Hour special. Fairy Seer is like your turn one play, basically. It's a one mana 1/1 flying when it enters the battlefield, scry 2. And that pairs really well with a number of cards in this deck, including Spell Stutter Sprite, which I think many people are familiar with, so I won't read that one. As well as Ninja of the Deep Hours itself. And if you're not familiar with Ninja of the Deep Hours, I'm not surprised. It doesn't get played a ton, but it is a ninjutsu card.
I love this card.
It's a ninjutsu card that when it deals damage to a player, you draw a card. So ninjutsu is an ability that when an unblocked creature, when you have an unblocked creature, you can pay one in a blue to put this creature, the ninjutsu creature, into play in place of that unblocked creature, returning the unblocked creature to your hand. So basically, like, swaps it out.
Worth noting that ninjutsu costs on different cards are different. This one just happens to be one in a blue.
Yeah, thank
you. So it lets you have a nice little curve of turn one, Fairy Seer. You also see mono blue. I've also seen in the past mono blue Delver decks where turn one Delver that doesn't flip is also a viable option. You attack and you swap out your Delver for Ninja of the Deep Hours. And it has the additional line of text on it, which is why this ninjutsu card matters. That whenever it deals damage to a player, you get to draw a card. So you get your 1/1 through unblocked, you swap it out with Ninja of the Deep Hours, and you get a free card. So basically you've got Howling Mind. This is a 4-mana creature normally for this effect. So to get it for 2 mana just kind of pushes your blue deck pretty far ahead.
Yeah.
And thankfully they banned Daze and Gush. Otherwise you'd have to deal with this egregiously difficult to handle complement of things like Daze, Gush, Foil, Counterspell, and just like figure out how to beat these mana leak, just figure out how to beat these stupid 2/2s and 3/3, 3/2s, 1/1s through a pile of counterspells.
Yeah, and with the exception of Gurmag Angler in this deck, every other creature has an ETB effect. With the exception of Gurmag Angler and Ninja of the Deep Hours. So returning the creature to your hand is not a drawback. I mean, you've got Fairy Seer, which I mentioned, scries, Augur of Bolas is in here. Thorn of the Black Rose, when it enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch.
Okay, I want to stop there. That's actually super important to talk about.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of card advantage in Pauper. Like, just pure, like, people don't play Divination. There are some cantrip creatures, but they're not often frequently used. Like, most of your cantrip creatures are uncommons or rares. So, like, the Monarch is a really big deal. And you'll see, I'm sure, the most popular Monarch deck is usually Boros Monarch.
And stuff. Yeah, there's quite a few Boros variants.
Yeah, a lot of fights can happen back and forth over the Monarch. And this is the perfect format for it, because there's a lot of 1/1s that fly and 2/2s and 2/3s with protection from monocolor and just like random stuff like that, that you can actually jockey for position over the Monarch, and it actually makes a really interesting game mechanic.
Yeah. And there's quite a few Monarch options at common. And I think there's one at every color. There's a 4-mana creature spell at every color that gives you Monarch when it enters the battlefield. So I would believe that all 4 of those get played. I think I've seen all 4 of them. In fact, the blue one is showing up in this Dimir Fairies deck as well. Sometimes it's like a one of. That one is unblockable as long as an opponent is the Monarch. So it can basically snatch it back whenever you're not the Monarch. All right, so next up is Storm, Pauper Storm. So in Pauper, you have access to all of the damn rituals. You are looking at Dark Ritual, Rite of Flame, Cabal Ritual, Seething Song, and Manamorphose. And beyond that, you've also got Lotus Petal, one of the most powerful commons that you can ever find in this game. I mean, like, that's an awful lot of rituals. you're not hurting for that. And so pair that with a bunch of draw spells at common, such as Knight's Whisper and Sign and Blood. And then, of course, Manamorphose gets you a card as well. And you're searching through your deck with Faithless Looting, and you're going to find Chatterstorm to put a bunch of squirrels into play. And that's the plan. It's pretty simple. Beat them down.
All right. This is a more refined version, than it sounds like, of the Chatterstorm deck that I've seen.
Refined, huh?
Yeah. So I saw a lot of initial versions of this Chatterstorm deck, which were a little wild, actually. Yeah. Because there's like, I can't remember the name of the stupid card. There's like a card that's like, give your creatures +1/+1 in haste and learn. And so they had like this learn engine.
Yep. It in has their that sideboard. Too.
Okay. Still has that. Perfect. Yeah. I was like, this sounds more refined because I don't, because the bad card isn't in there, but, you get a lot of mana turnover and mana filtering. You get things like Tinderwall. You have land grant to go fetch out lands, so you don't have to play as many lands in your storm deck. You can play, like, you know, 8, 9, 10 lands or whatever. You have Wild Cantor, so there's, like, a lot of a large glut of mana, and you just have to find enough powerful cards to sort of pay off. And you have to sequence correctly, because if you lay your mana creatures out there a little too early, you might not have enough storm to do the things you need to do.
Right.
Such as Galvanic Relay, if that's your backup plan.
Yeah, that's a card that I neglected to mention, but that's an important one to consider. And that's a card that many aren't probably familiar with because it comes from one of those Master Sets, or what do you call them?
Horizons? No, Modern Masters 2.
Modern Masters 2. Okay. Exile the top card of your library. During your next turn, you may play that card, and it has Storm. So that gives you access to, like, a bunch more rituals that you can find if this is, like, you know, the last card you play after a sequence of rituals. You still have to pay the mana on those cards, but if you're gonna like flip into like three or four more rituals and like, you know, maybe like your payoff, that's all you really need to like really go off. But yeah, first day of class is pretty nice, especially when first day of class can fetch you a pest summoning or something as like you know, just some way to like stabilize a little bit. There's also Introduction to Annihilation as like a, oh god, how do I solve this problem and like just stay alive for a little while longer. So I don't know, it's a silly deck. It's about as close to a legacy deck as you're gonna get in this format, because it's like literally a 12-10 land deck. It's kind of nuts. The one I'm looking at doesn't have the wall of what's it called, the one green mana wall that you
Tinderwall?
Mentioned? Tinderwall. Yeah, it doesn't have Tinderwall, but that's an option too. Tinderwall. Land grant's a crazy card. You get free land, and it also counts as a spell. Yeah. But it can only grab a forest, I think, is the reason. I think that limits you, because this one's more black-red based.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is more refined. The original versions I saw were green-based.
Yeah.
So it was like Wild Cantor, Tinderwall. Like, your Lotus Petals were kind of, and your Wild Cantors were the only way you were casting your, like, Cabal Rituals and Dark Rituals and your Anamorphoses. And then more like red-green, splash, black.
Gotcha.
It's kind of that design.
All right, next up on the list here is an Elves deck. And this one's pretty straightforward. These Elves decks are... load up the board with a bunch of elves. Payoff being Priest of Titania is tap to add a green mana for each elf card in play. Well-Wisher, tap to gain a life for each elf on the battlefield. Or Timberwatch Elf, tap to target creature gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of elves in play. Now, keep in mind, this comes obvious to a lot of players, but you do this when you have an unblocked creature as a target. And... you can mostly get them in one shot with that guy, because you're gonna be pooping out a lot of elves with something like Lissalana Huntmaster, or you know, just playing lots of elves in general.
You also get the mana engine of that you're used to seeing in like legacy elves of Heritage Druid, Nettle Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's a big kind of, you get the three biggest things that elves like use to generate advantage and to move forward in the game, which are Nettle Sentinel Heritage Druid combo, and then Priest of Titania. So, like, those are kind of the two big engines that elves use to generate mana.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, every once in a while, you'll see an ambitious player playing, like, an elf that searches for a basic land and playing an island in their elf deck, or playing the morph guy that taps two elves you control for one of any color.
Yep.
I think it's like Birch Lore Rangers,
yep.
Yeah, nice. And they'll play Distant Melody, which is 3 and a blue, draw a card for each creature of a specific type you control. So you pick elves, you draw a billion. It's like having a Regal Force, basically. Some ambitious people do that, but really you can get away with it. As long as you can find your Timberwatch elf, like, you're good enough. Like, that's all you need.
Yeah. Another key piece of the puzzle is some number of Viridian Longbow. Usually it's just like one of... with Nettle Sentinel, you can tap and untap that Viridian Longbow creature. By the way, that allows the creature to tap to deal 1 damage to target creature or player. So Nettle Sentinel untaps every time a green creature comes into play, turns every cast into 1 damage. But you can also...
Every time you cast a green spell, yeah.
Green spell, yep. Yeah, I'm sorry. Almost every green spell in this deck is a creature, with the exception of the Stampede.
Well, the broken part would be if it was actually creature in play, Lissalana Huntmaster would just, like, make this thing a tap-untap machine.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. Yeah. And then there's also Quirion Ranger, which untaps creatures as well. So you can do some little shenanigans with that.
You also have Wirewood. Wait, do you have Wirewood Symbiote? Is that common or is that uncommon?
Wirewood Symbiote is... I don't think that's...
It might be an uncommon.
I think... No, that's a common.
Yeah, so you get that.
An uncommon. That's an uncommon, sorry.
That's what I thought. I was like, that can't be a common. Because giving that deck that engine too with Elvish Visionary would just be too much.
Yeah. All right, after Elves, we've got Burn. Good old-fashioned Burn. Burn's actually got some pretty incredibly powerful tools. The thing that Burn lacks the most in comparison to like the modern and legacy versions is the creature package. And I think that's where a lot of the rare slots are absorbed in Burn. You have to run Getu Lava Runner and Thermal Alchemist in this. Things along those lines. I've seen stuff like the one dude that every time you play like a non-creature spell, you can deal a damage to your opponent as well. I can't remember the name of that guy. He's like a 2-mana 2/1. But the spell suite is actually pretty damn powerful for Burn, and it's pretty similar to what you're expecting to see from those other formats, more powerful formats. You've got Chain Lightnings, Lava Spikes, Lightning Bolts, Searing Blaze, Rift Bolt, Skewer the Critics. Pauper has access to Fire Blast, which is a real mainstay in Pauper in these decks. And then Needle Drop is really pretty powerful because there are an awful lot of X1s here. And this one is 1 damage to target creature or player that was dealt damage this turn and draw a card. This can finish off the Searing Blaze targets pretty well.
Yeah, I was gonna say not good against X1s, but
oh yeah. Cantrips. Yeah, what am I talking about? Yes. Has to target a spell that's already been dealt damage. So I'm thinking of something else. Never mind me.
Yep.
Misspoke. So, anyways, Burn is Burn. Tron. Mentioned Tron earlier. Tron does Tron things. Tron plays all of the colors because Tron does Prophetic Prism tricks to tap for mana of any color, as well as Bonder's Ornament. And Tron's big setup is Mnemonic Wall, which enters the battlefield to return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand, along with Ghostly Flicker, which is a card that says exile 2 artifact creatures or land and return them to the battlefield under your control. So you're going to blink your Mnemonic Walls or Mull Drifters or Stonehorn Dignitaries. As long as one Mnemonic Wall is among the targets, you're going to continuously loop that combo to just basically run your opponent into the ground with that value.
You can also blink your Prophetic Prisms just to get a little extra card draw. And I'm going to speak from the last time I played Bopper, which was a couple years ago. Pretty sure these are playing the end of the battlefield tap, gain life lands. You can blink those lands to gain a little extra life, too, if you need that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of options to include some powerful and expensive spells in this one. You'll see some mystical teachings happening. That's a card that Tron can readily afford and get to a toolbox package type of situation. Pulse of Murasa is also pretty common, a really powerful card that can find the tools as well as kind of recoup the lost Tron lands along the way if your opponent's going after them.
And then usually you're pulsing to get back your mnemonic wall mm-hmm. to like set that up, or your Mole Drifter. I've played this deck a lot, so I'll go through it. Like usually you have teachings and Forbidden Alchemy is like flashback cards to spend your mana on. And then like you have a bunch of powerful one-offs. Like you have a Caravex Torch is like a fireball so you can end the game. You have Capsize, which is usually the way the game actually ends, where you just capsize and buy back your opponent's spells. So those of you who don't know, that's one blue for an instant with buyback 3. It just bounces a permanent. So with your Tron lands, you can just capsize with buyback multiple things, and eventually they end up with all their permanents in their hand. And then just like various edicts and things like that, cast downs, just like kill your opponent's creatures and leave you alive. So.
Yep, and then just to cover one more deck, because I think this is one that we haven't... This is kind of a domain we haven't really touched on. That is like the Orzhov Pestilence area, the kind of like black-based strategies.
Yes, this deck is annoying.
So, as I mentioned, there's not really like a Wrath of God type of spell in Pauper, but what you do have is Pestilence and Crypt Rats, and... you know, they do a pretty damn good job of covering that territory where you don't have Wrath.
There's also a combo here that you literally, your Pestilence doesn't die.
Yeah.
So Guardian of the Guild Pact is a 4-mana 2/3 protection from monocolor. And then for those of you who don't know what Pestilence is, it's a 4-mana 2-black for an enchantment. You pay a black, you deal 1 damage to all creatures and all players. And then when there are no creatures to play, you sacrifice Pestilence. Well, you have a protection for monocolored creature. Pestilence is a black enchantment. Therefore, it can't be damaged by Pestilence, so it'll never die. So you can just use Pestilence to burn your opponent out after you chip shot them with either the Monarch cards. There's like a Monarch creature that White has, or your Guardian of the Guild Pact, or whatever other your Crypt Rat chip shots, etc.
Yeah. That's basically the idea with this one. Guardian of the Guild Pact basically being like the last man standing and dumbing your opponent to death. There's just a lot of like kind of control-y type of support packages here with Castigate, Duress, Cast Down, Chainer's Edict, Echoing Decay. Just a lot of like really good like removal and discard spells to kind of make sure that you can live long enough to set that up.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, that's Pauper in a nutshell. There's certainly deck strategies that we haven't covered. Daryl mentioned the Boros Monarch deck. There are definitely some Delver strategies out there. The main one right now is the mono blue Delver. However, there is a blue black Delver that was kind of like the soup du jour a couple months back. There's mono white heroic strategies, which are cool. Go on.
Yeah, people also play like there's like a Battle Screech Prismatic Strands token deck. People will play Delver in Is It in blue red as well, so that's not a thing you won't see. And there's also it's probably not a deck anymore because of the lack of Gush. There's definitely a deck that I don't know if it's still a thing where it's Nomad's Encore. Tireless Tribe, sorry. The Tireless Tribe combo deck.
Yeah, I don't think that exists anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, because Gush was a driver of that. So, lots of things to do. Everyone can find their soup du jour in Pauper.
Yeah.
Like, it's there.
Yeah,
it's
like,
probably pretty cheap.
It's incredibly cheap, and you get to play with a lot of cards that are banned in other formats, which is like the exciting part. Like, I mean, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to play Preordains again,
you're a Delver Stygium kind of guy. Preordain time?
Yeah, I put together blue black fairies. I basically have the pieces like available for like most of the blue strategies, to be honest. I have the Scred stuff. There's a blue red Scred deck. I really like The looks of that. That's, you know, just right up my alley. Blue Elemental Blast and Red Elemental Blast, as well as the Hydro Blast, and what's the red version of that?
Pyroblast.
Thank you. Those are all options for Pauper sideboard cards, which are just like incredibly powerful commons to put in your sideboard. So randomly is just like slam dunk.
Yeah, those are the gatekeepers for some strategies, actually, as far as online goes. And it might have gone down a little bit with some recent printings, but for the longest time, Hydro Blast, Pyroblast were $5-$10 a piece. So, like, if you were really strapped for cash, that was kind of where you made your concessions on your sideboard, was just like, I don't need these Pyroblasts, whatever.
Yeah, Blue Elemental Blast, looks like you can get a trio of them for $378 right now, so it's pretty cheap.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh,
Ninja,
my God.
Ninjas are a little steep, looking at like $250 a piece, but I mean, like, I'm looking at this Scred deck as an example. You can own the whole thing for 38 tickets, so not bad, you know?
Pretty good.
I mean, like, Magic is a luxury hobby, but when it comes to you know, all things considered, this is a pretty affordable format. Ash Barons has been reprinted enough to make that accessible. That card was expensive.
That card was like $10.
Yeah.
Pauper Digital Objects are actually purchasable.
Yeah. So we'll leave it at that.
Or
today.
You can use manatrader.com.
Yeah, use manatrader. Oh, perfect. Yeah, great. I missed that segue. That was so obvious. I'm sorry. All right. Yeah. We're going to leave it at that today, but I thought it was a good opportunity to kind of just delve into a format that we don't often talk about, but is a fantastic option because, you know, the price of modern and historic and legacy are climbing, but this one just seems to kind of be actually becoming cheaper over time.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great option for players who are looking for, you know, some competitive games of Magic, some interesting games of Magic, and honestly, a really refreshing and unique experience because it's totally different than anything you'll play in any of those other places.
Yep. So,
there you go.
Catch you next time. All right, perfect. Easy,
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to manatraders.com, mtgcast.com, and thediscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.